Calling all stations. Clear the air lanes. Clear all air lanes for the big broadcast.
That is music that I hear every Saturday at 7 p.m. That's what's that's coming out of my TV every Saturday at 7 p.m. when I watch Svengoolie. And it's a milestone year for Rich Coase as Svengoolie. It's the 40th year he's been playing Svengoolie, if you can believe that. 40 years. And so we wanted to get Rich on to talk about that. But not only that... he's got a special programming stuff going on in May. It's Frankenstein month. May is Frankenstein month, and so we want to get into talk to that. And basically, any excuse to get Rich on is a great excuse because he's the best. Rich Coase, aka Svengoolie, good friend of the show, and we want to welcome him back. Rich, how are you?
I'm good. Do you really need an excuse to have me come on?
No, I want you to come on. If I could have you on every night, I would, Rich.
Yeah, at this point, I don't think we need any excuses. All you got to do is just let me know you want me to come on.
Well, I appreciate that, man. You know how much I admire you.
So, well, you're very nice. I appreciate that.
Well, it's great to talk to you, Rich. I know that you know, we always see each other at least once a year at the Flashback Horror Convention.
Yeah, definitely so. And this year, I think we're going to be doing a couple things special, aren't we?
Yes, we are. There's going to be, you know, Mike and I were talking, Mike and Mia and I were talking about it. Mike and Mia Kurz, who run Flashback Horror Convention, said that we have to do a big celebration for your 40th anniversary, and we're going to do that the first night. We're going to do that Friday, and then you'll be there Saturday, as you always are, signing autographs and taking pictures, and then, of course, hosting the fantastic costume contest. So, but we got something special. We're going to have some stuff that really special stuff happening for Friday night to celebrate your 40th, Rich.
Yeah, it should be great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's always a good time. Flashback is always a good time. And I've said this before. It's always an honor to introduce you before the costume contest, but that's my favorite. That's the highlight of the weekend for me every year.
Why is that?
Because you kill. It's so funny, and the costumes are so weird, and some of the people are nuts, and just you dealing with them and making the comments and making references that some people don't get in the room, which is always one of my favorite things, Rich.
But the good thing is, I think you get every single one of them.
Every one of them. It's funny, because I introduce you, and then I just get off the stage and sit right down in the front row. it's seriously the highlight of the weekend for me, so there you go.
And it always is a lot of fun. I mean, and like you said, the costumes go from really incredible to real head-scratchers at times.
Yeah, absolutely.
You never know what's going to happen at that thing, so it's always a riot.
It's funny. I always like it when you get multiple Jasons who won't talk to you.
Yes, that seems to be very popular. And, you know, it's like trying to put variations on my reactions to that is certainly a limiting sort of thing.
Yeah, I just remember last year, there's this kid that he's in the children's section of the costume contest. The last year, he came as the thing with two heads. He had a Rosie Greer. On his neck. He had a neck brace on with Rosie Greer. With Rosie Greer, so he was the thing with two heads. And the year before, he came as Roddy Piper from They Live.
That's right, yes.
And that kid his father just dresses the kid. I don't think the kid knows anything about what he's dressed up as, but the father, father just dresses him up, and every year, I'm always curious to see what that kid's going to look like this year, too.
Well, his dad is an artist, so I think he, you know, puts a lot of effort into what he's going to have the young man be.
Yeah, well, it always turns out really great, and those costume contests are fun. And we got a really great lineup for Flashback this year. Bruce Campbell is back after, I think, 12, 13 years of not being at the fest.
I have never met him, and I'm hoping that I get the chance.
Oh, man, he's great, Rich. He's just great.
And I know.
And but a big coup, we got Sam Raimi.
Yeah, I saw that, and his brother Ted was there previously.
Yeah, Ted's been there, but we've never had Sam Raimi, and I don't think he's done a lot of conventions, you know. And I'm really excited. I interviewed him years ago when Darkman came out.
Oh, right.
So that was a long time ago, but I'm really excited to have that. And we've got Robert Englund is going to be there. He's a perennial.
Always great to see him. And Amanda Wiss.
Right, Amanda Wiss. A lot of people from the Nightmare movies. There's going to be a reunion for Night of the Creeps.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and then Tony Todd, Candyman, Virginia Madsen from Candyman, is going to be there. So another great and a stellar lineup, and I know a lot of the activities are going to be fun, including celebrating your 40th. So that's going to be a good time in August.
Yeah, it seems like it's so far away now, but I know it's going to be no time at all, and we'll be there.
And, of course, we'll get you on right before that so we can talk about it. But, all right, let's talk about 40 years. When is the exact date?
I think it's about June 17th, maybe.
Okay, so June 17th will be the 40th anniversary, official 40. But you've been playing this character now for 40 years, and I know maybe people know the story already, but tell us how it started. You started as son of Svengoolie.
Yeah, exactly, and that all came about because the original Svengoolie, Jerry G. Bishop, at one point, while he was still in town, was approached by somebody from a local station who said, "Do you want to just do Svengoolie like as a summer sort of, summer filler type thing?" And, just a limited kind of thing. And Jerry said, "Well, I don't really know if I want to do it." But he turned to me and said, "But you could do it. You could be son of Svengoolie, and I'll produce it." I mean, he had the confidence in me to do this.
Yeah.
And I know I've told the story a lot, so I'll make it really brief. Nothing ever came of that. We had some false starts on it. When Jerry headed off to San Diego, he told me, I give you permission if you want to do the Son of Svengoolie thing. I shopped it around various places, and eventually I landed at WFLD.
Right.
And I was the son of Svengoolie, and we ran with it.
Yeah, and you started that in 1979. Well, first of all, you can tell the story too about how you became friends with Jerry.
Oh yeah, I was just a fan of his. He was on both radio and TV at the time. He was doing mornings on WCFL. And his sense of humor really jived with mine, so I really enjoyed his show. And he also was working at WFLD, Channel 32 at the time. And he just happened to be the guy who was the... that was when they had live staff announcers at TV stations.
Right.
He was the guy on duty on Friday nights when they would run these horror movies. And he started to fool around, do the accented voice... and created the character just as voiceover originally.
Yeah.
And at that time, he would read things that people had sent to him, so I started sending him jokes and things like that.
Yeah.
He liked the stuff I sent him. He'd start to request specific things like, could you do a parody of this, this commercial, or, I need a song parody for this or that. And that eventually ended up working with him at WFLD, and then later on when he went to WMAQ Radio, I worked with him there.
Yeah, and I kind of equate the relationship that you had with Jerry in the same kind of way that I had a mentor relationship with Roy Leonard. And you know what I mean? It feels like that. Like, you started out as a fan, and then, well, for some reason, Roy took a liking to me, and I still have no idea why. and I got to work with him, and he became a mentor, and that's pretty much responsible for my career.
Yeah, and then you're right. It's the same thing, really, because, Jerry was, just like Roy, very generous about, helping me out.
Yeah.
And, he could have just, taken the material I wrote for him and said, "Hey, thanks a lot, kid," and he never done anything.
Yeah.
But he got me involved in the TV show when he went to WMAQ Radio. He took me along as producer, and actually it turned out like sidekick because, 80% of the people he'd talk to on the phone were me doing different characters. just the fact that when he left town, he said, "I give you permission to do the Son of Svengoolie thing."
Yeah.
And never asked for anything back.
That's, yeah.
And, I do know, and I'm very flattered that he was very proud of what I did with the character and the fact that I was very successful with it.
Yeah. And your Svengoolie is a lot different than Jerry's Svengoolie.
Yeah, and well, I think it's amplification of both of our personalities. Jerry's was kind of, you know, this sort of hippie vampire,
right,
with, as he put it, a sort of Transylvania Yiddish accent.
Yeah.
And then when I started, I did have the accent, and he always said mine was kind of Transylvanian Lawrence Welk, which I still think is pretty cool. But eventually, as we went along, people ask now, you know, you don't do the accent that much anymore, and it's true. The reason for that is that they would have me reading a lot of information in a very short period of time.
Right.
I had to read it real fast, and the accent started to get in the way of people understanding it. So I started to kind of, you know, lessen it a little more and a little more as we went along. And
yeah,
now the excuse I use is, well, you know, I've been in this country long enough that I lost the accent.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. Now, there was a period of time when you weren't doing Svengoolie.
Yeah.
But you had like the Code Zone when you were on FLD with the Code Zone and things like that.
Right.
And then when did Svengoolie come back as Svengoolie, not Sun?
That was in 1995, right about January 1st of 1995, when Neil Saban, who created MeTV and turned WCIU into the U,
yeah,
hired me. I think I was his first talent hire, in fact. And he had said, you know, would you mind doing the Svengoolie character again? And as I've said probably many times before, there was never a week of my life during the time when I was not doing the program on a regular basis that somebody didn't recognize me and say, hey, are you ever going to do that again? Because I really liked it.
Yeah.
And the fact that it meant so much to so many people was definitely why I said, yeah, sure, I'll be glad to do it. See, during the time even when I wasn't on air, I was still doing appearances as the character.
Sure.
I do stuff on various radio and TV shows and, you know, public appearances. So I was still Sven during that time.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, I can't believe it's been 40 years, and I've been on board all 40 years, Rich.
So maybe you should get some sort of gold watch or gold rubber chicken or
something.
Well,
I don't know. I still got my 3D glasses from the Revenge of the Creature. I still got them.
So that's good enough, yeah.
All right, Rich, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, great. Rich Coase, the great Rich Coase, is with us. Svengoolie, better known as. You can check out svengoolie.com. Celebrating 40 years as America's favorite horror host. We got more to talk about with Rich and some really great programming coming up for the month of May on Svengoolie, which you can see on MeTV, 7 p.m. every Saturday night. Okay, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up. Then right after that, more with Rich and Svengoolie right after this.
Take a quick look and you can see this town is just like Mayberry. Even our hero has to jump when he meets Helen Crump, the old guy who first found the slop is Emmett from the fix-it shop. If this kid wasn't such a dope, he'd be a lot like Ope.
Right.
Can you tell me?
The great Svengoolie and Doug performing a parody of the Andy Griffith Show from for the movie The Blob, which was on last week, which was shown last Saturday night. On MeTV, on the Svengoolie show. And that's who we're talking to. We're talking to Svengoolie, Rich Coase. Coming up, we're going to talk about the best movie monsters and some great celebrity feuds. That's all coming up and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Triple Play Thursday, get your requests in. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. That's all coming up on the show. But let's get back to our conversation with Svengoolie, a.k.a. Rich Coase. Rich, welcome back.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to still be here.
Good. You know, it's every time I see The Blob, I always forget just how goofy that movie is. But I love the theme song, and you talked about that about the theme song itself for the opening credits. It's just so weird that that's how the movie opens.
Yeah, especially because it seems like it's such a cheerful, fun song.
Yeah.
You know, for something that's supposed to be so horrendous and is killing people. And by the way, for the people in the Chicago area, we rerun that this Saturday morning at 11 a.m. on WCIU, just in case they want to catch that.
Right. And you do the encore performance of the previous show every Saturday afternoon at 11.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So if you can check, if you missed The Blob last Saturday and the stellar acting by the teenagers in the.
Yeah, and teenagers use that term loosely.
Yeah, I know.
Because, you know, you've got Steve McQueen and Anita Corso, you know, and they're what? You know, probably on the top edge of 20s at the the very least.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, here they're supposed to be these high school kids?
Right. I love the fact that they're billed as and as the teenagers in the opening credits. That always cracks me up, man.
Yeah.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit about what you do. You know, I've been on your show a couple of times. I've had the honor of throwing chickens at you. I've been the arm at the door for the joke at the end of the show, and I've seen the kind of work that you put into it. And I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling how much work you put into it. I mean, you write the whole thing, you research it, you get all the information about the cast members and the tidbits about the making of the movie. You have to watch the movies and all that stuff. It takes a lot of time, doesn't it?
Yes, and I hand sew each one of the T-shirts that we sell too. So
I have a store. That's one of my favorite.
That's so funny because you know, that was just written into the promo that we did, and you know, I never thought that would become such a catchphrase.
Yeah,
because I will meet people and they will quote that line to me.
Oh, it's fantastic! I watch your show. Yeah, as you know, Rich, I watch it every Saturday.
And, sure, yeah,
and I always like post some stuff on Facebook while I'm watching it. And I usually post, you know, so long, screwy, see in St. Louis as it's happening at the end, because I know that's the end of the show. And then I also usually post, you know, just very simply, I have a store. That's the which is just great. But yeah, no, it's a lot of work that you put into it. I mean, it's a lot of time. How long does it usually take for you to put together an episode?
Well, it's hard to say because as I'm working on one, I'm also working on, you know, after the shoot from a different show.
Yeah.
So it's hard to do. I mean, you know, basically what I do is, you know, I watch the movie, and as I'm screening it, I'm taking copious notes and breaking it down into the number of segments. If it's long or if there's objectionable material for our MeTV audience, I figure out where the edits should be then. And then once I get that done, it's a matter of, you know, doing the writing. We go into the studio. We shoot, you know, usually about 3 or 4 days out of a month. And a lot of times we're doing more than one show during
right.
that time.
Right.
And then after that, it's, you know, as we call it, post-production, where, you know, I'm finding the different clips and stuff that go with what we've got from the bits that we did, and finding anything else that we need for that, and putting together the edit guide for our amazing editor, director Chris Faulkner, who also is just an incredible guy with such a sense of detail. And, you know, he makes the show, he makes the stuff that I write even better than it could possibly ever be, because he adds so much to it.
Yeah.
And very impressive stuff. And, you know, we've got Chaz on audio, Chaz Ailing, and my executive producer and also an editor, Jim Roach.
Yeah.
And that's the main core of the show. It's four guys, basically. And we all do a lot, and it's such a unique, you know, very, very small group to be doing a TV show.
Yeah, it is, and it just turns out so entertaining and so well. And you know, and again, I want to congratulate you on the fact that, like, it's national, and you guys have been doing great, and now you're getting fans from all over the world. It must be very gratifying after all these years that people still love Svengoolie so much.
It is, and it's nice to see that the people in other parts of the country like the show and have gotten into it. You know, I think we've talked about this before. It seems like everybody grew up with some sort of horror host.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, anybody other than them is no good, you know, because that was their guy.
Yeah.
But I'm very, very flattered that people have taken to the show, even if they had another host that they used to watch. And I think that's what led to my winning the Rondo again.
You did. You won the Rondo Award. Congratulations for favorite horror host.
Yeah, it was very cool. From what I understand, I got more votes than anybody or anything in any of the other categories.
That's great.
Yeah, and this is nice, because this is the 8th one I've gotten, and actually the 7th consecutive one. And the cool thing is there are more and more hosts now in the category, because I think our success around the country has certainly stimulated interest in horror hosting, and it's even gotten some of the markets to decide, hey, we can do our own show like this.
Yeah.
So it just it's kind of, you know, helped to keep the horror hosting genre alive, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. And I really still incredibly admire what you do, because there aren't a lot of local programming anymore. There used to be a ton of local TV shows with hosts and shows and things like that. It just doesn't really exist as much anymore.
Yeah, and I think part of it's economic, because a lot of the stations have to do news and public affairs and sports, and they just don't have, you know, the budgets or the time available to devote to doing something that's strictly entertainment.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're still doing it. I you know, and again, like I said, I watch it every, without fail, every Saturday. And I know a ton of people who do. And I think it's awesome. Now, you know, the other thing is, when you watch when you watch these movies, I mean, you watch the whole film, because you have to know where to edit it and where, you know, where the jokes are going to go and stuff like that. How many do you rewatch a lot of the movies that you've seen already?
A lot of times I do. Yeah. Yeah, I will watch ones that I've already seen, and sometimes we have to make adjustments depending on when we previously ran it, because stuff that ran before it was on the network, we have to, you know, the amount of time that was available to us when we were on locally was just a little bit more than the time that we have, because we have a very set time on the network.
Right.
So we'll have to make some changes and edits and stuff, and we reshoot things to update the shows as well.
Do you have favorites that you've shown, Rich? Like favorite movies that you've shown on the show?
Oh, well, you know, I think we've talked about this before. Those core Universal movies are, you know, my favorites. And, of course, then going to, like, Creature from the Black Lagoon, which is certainly a favorite of mine. And, you know, bringing it up, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I always enjoy running that, and that is one of our very most requested. It may be our most requested movie, and that's one of the ones that's coming up.
It's for Frankenstein month. You know, we was it last year that you did Godzilla month?
Yes, mm-hmm.
And so we had you on to talk about that. And this year you chose Frankenstein. You're talking about the core Universal movies. You know, you're showing these are all classics that are coming up. I mean, every Saturday is a Frankenstein movie. Did that idea come from you? Like, hey, let's do a month of Frankenstein.
It was pretty much between me and my boss, Neil Saban.
Yeah.
You know, because we know how important those movies are, and you know how much people love them. They're among the most requested ones. And we're going to start out with, you know, the original 1931 Frankenstein with Boris Karloff as the monster. And then after that, we go to the famed Bride from 1935. Again, you still got Boris as the monster. The funny thing about that in the first movie is that Dr. Frankenstein's wife changes. In the first one, she's Mae Clark, I think.
Yeah.
And the second one, she's a much younger woman, Valerie Hobson, who I think at the time was not even 18 years old.
Wow.
And I think they lied about her age to get her into the movies.
And then you're showing, of course, the classic on May 18th, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, which I never tire of. I've seen it a million times.
Yeah, and that time you've got Glenn Strange taking the monster role. And also, you know, it's the only other time he speaks, really, other than in Ghost of Frankenstein.
Right.
Which
you're showing,
actually will run the week after.
You're running that the week after on May 25th, Ghost of Frankenstein. Yeah.
And that one has Lon Chaney Jr. as the Frankenstein monster.
So we got three.
But it has Bela Lugosi as Igor.
Yeah.
Which I think was such a great character, and he did so well with that. For people who think, the only thing Bela could do was, you know, stand there and, you know, be the kind of stiff Dracula.
Yeah.
You see him play Igor, and it's like, you know, it's a real revelation to some people.
It is. It's a great performance. It's a lot of fun to watch, too. So, all right. Rich, hang on, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, Rich Coase is with us. He's Sven Gulli, and starting this Saturday, it's a month of Frankenstein. Every Saturday night, there will be another Frankenstein movie playing on Sven Gulli. We're going to talk more with Rich coming up right here on 720 WGN.
Plan 9, and it opened up my eyes. I saw Plan 9. Who was that fella who tried to pass for Bella? I saw Plan 9, where Vampira had no lines. I saw Plan 9, someone had to help Tor up to get out of his grave, because he's too fat. But there's stuff worse than that.
Oh, man. How's it going, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are talking with a national treasure, as far as I'm concerned. Sven Gulli, Rich Coase is with us, celebrating 40 years as America's favorite horror host. Recent winner, again, of the Rondo Classic Horror Award for a favorite horror host. We're talking about all the stuff that has to do with the show and Frankenstein Month that's coming up. Hey, Rich, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Yes. Let's talk a little bit about those parody songs. You and Doug worked together on those?
Yes, yeah. It's funny because, you know, I'll try to find a song, and, you know, a lot of times people are like, when I first say, well, here's a song I'm going to do, and I tell them the real name of the song, they're like, how does that even make sense?
Yeah.
But it's because, you know, either part of a lyric or something falls into place in my tiny little mind,
yeah.
And it makes sense that I've got a hook for it. So once I figure that out, I'll figure how much of the song we're going to use, and I will contact Doug and say, you know, I'll usually send him an email that tells him exactly what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes the entire track himself, and then the first time we rehearse it really is when right before we tape it. He brings in the track, and we play it, you know, in the studio. I go through it once, and if I'm close enough and hitting all the right parts of it, we just record then.
That's fantastic. Now, you've known Doug forever, correct?
Yeah, I went to high school with him. We were in high school in concert band and jazz band and orchestra, and I was a trombone player at the time.
No, wise.
And he played trumpet, and occasionally he does play trumpet on the show, too, which
yes.
People are really into. They really enjoy getting the chance to see him, because he's an incredible musician. He used to work in L.A. during the time after my first show was canceled. He went out to L.A. and worked in the band on the Fox Late Night Joan Rivers show.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was a band that was full of incredible musicians, including another guy we went to high school with, keyboardist Randy Waldman, who just got a Grammy this year.
Mm-hmm.
And the band was led by one of the Hudson brothers.
Right.
Mark Hudson, I think.
Yeah, right, exactly. Hey, and his daughter plays, and she was featured on the show.
That's right, yeah. She's going to be coming up again next month, too. She's a sax player.
Yeah.
Natalie, she's really great.
She's terrific.
Her character is Anita Exorcist. Say it fast. Anita yeah. Exorcist.
Got okay, it. There you got go. It. When did you come up with, and I'm sorry, what do you call the bit where you do the drawing and we have to guess what the word is?
Oh, yeah. That's called Too Drawn Out.
Too Drawn Out. That's I love that. Rich, that's one of my favorite segments that you do.
Now, do you often get it right?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
See, that's good, because there are some people who will say to me, I never get it. And they say, and the other people just complain, there's no way to understand what you're doing.
That's kind of the charm of it, though. I love that segment. Do you have any of those coming up on the Frankenstein month?
You know, I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, because we've got everything already on tape, and
right.
we shoot so far ahead, I lose track. I'm sorry.
That's okay. By the way, I do have loaded into my system here as of sound bites. I do have this one,
Berwyn,
which is. Which is just so classic. We know that we're, you know, the origin of that, but it never tires, never tires. Let's talk a little bit real quickly here about Kerwin. When did Kerwin become a character on the show?
Well, we always had somebody helping me with the mail.
Right.
At first it was Doug.
Right.
And then because he wasn't always available when we tape on more than one day, we started to have little substitute creatures do it. We had Ed the Bat, named for Ed Wood, and he was difficult to handle because it was, you know, a bat on a string that was puppeted.
Right.
And I do the voice, and we did a pitch change on the voice for it that made it very high and screechy. And my boss, Neil, couldn't stand it.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, he said, you know, you got to get rid of that. I don't like it. So we actually did a bit where Neil fired the bat. And we had a bunch of other things. We had like a sort of Godzilla that did the mail with me. We had a pterodactyl that was a disc jockey that was on, and went through a couple other characters. And finally, we used to have a show called Green Screen Adventures on WCIU.
Sure.
That used, you know, stories that kids wrote, and they brought them to life on the show. A young lady that worked on that, Jessica Carlton, was a master at creating puppets and such. And actually, she and Chris Faulkner, my director, worked together. I didn't even know about it. And created Kerwin for me. And it was made out of, you know, you've seen at the zoo and stuff, those sort of alligator heads on the end of a stick that you pull the trigger and it moves. That's basically what he is, mounted in a rubber chicken body.
Right.
And when we first got him, it was so cool, and you know, it was great. And with the eyes and the weird teeth and stuff, we were trying to figure out, and finally I figured out that he was like young Jerry Lewis.
Right.
So that's why his voice was sort of like that. And he's very, very popular.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I love his joke of the week. It's I check out the website every week for Kerwin's joke.
Yeah, I'm sure you can't tell this, but we ad-lib those. We just have the joke in front of us, and just, you know, it's stream of consciousness, making it up as we go along, and it's a lot of fun, and I enjoy it. And we always use the warning that the joke is something that Kerwin himself found funny, even if you don't.
Right, exactly. You know, what's really funny is that every you post that every Monday, and it coincides with my dad, who tells a joke every Monday morning on my show.
Sure, yes. Someday we're going to team them up and look out.
That would be fantastic. Absolutely. So Frankenstein is this Saturday, the original, which is just a classic. And then the next Saturday is Bride of Frankenstein, which I think a lot of people consider even better than the original.
I think so, yeah. And, there are some people who are kind of taken aback by the one part with the little small humanoid.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people think that that's kind of silly. In fact, our friend, the great WWE Hall of Famer Mick Foley, really dislikes that part of the movie, even though he loves the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, and that's true. And I think the character of the monster shows even more, you know, subtleties and different levels of emotion in
absolutely. That. Yeah, absolutely. Just it's great stuff. And these are just all four classics. I wanted to make sure we got you on to talk about them because these are just the classic horror movies that's how I got interested in these movies. Was I went from Universal and then it was Universal was the one that got me into the movies. I became fascinated by horror movies and monsters and stuff, but it was the Hammer movies that really put it over the top for me.
Sure. Yes. Yes. We've got a few of those coming up later in the year.
Oh, good.
And actually, here's a little sneak for you.
Sure.
In June, we normally mostly do reruns during the summer. In June, we're going to have four movies that we've never shown on the show before.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really, cool really great.
And one of them, I believe, is a Hammer movie.
I love the Hammer movies. My favorite of all of them. Because when I was a kid, and I think I've told you this, Rich, when I was a kid, you know, some people wanted to be, you know, like astronauts or baseball players and stuff. I wanted to be, I wanted to be Peter Cushing.
Sure.
I wanted to be Van Helsing. I thought Peter Cushing was the coolest man that ever lived. And I adore The Horror of Dracula. You've shown that one, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. We haven't shown it recently, but we have shown it in the past.
Yeah, I just love that. I love the candlesticks and him tearing down the curtains. It's just fantastic. But yeah, those Hammer movies just sort of like really, I dove in head first on those.
Yeah, and the fact that the color on most of them is you know something that just adds to the whole atmosphere of it.
Yep.
Just as like with the Universals, the black and white and the shadows really helps to create the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And the Hammer ones especially. I mean, there were at the beginning, of course, the black and white Hammers. But when you get into that color era, it's just amazing stuff.
It really is. And that was mind-blowing to me as a little kid, you know, watching the original Svengoolie. I would watch Jerry every week. And you know, you have so many fans of every generation, Rich. It must be kind of amazing to see like grandparents and parents and little kids who come up to you and get pictures and sign stuff for it.
Yeah, Nick, when I do appearances, it's amazing to me because it really is multi-generational. And, you know, you've got, you know, real little kids who are just so excited to meet me, which I think is very cool because they're not afraid of me.
Right.
And there are the parents who will bring a six-month-old baby and shove it in my face, and the poor child will be frightened, and I tell them, no, your child is frightened, please move it away. And they're, no, he likes you on TV. It's like, yes, but I'm like full size here. And then, you know, we've got teenagers, we've got young adults, all the way through, you know, to the senior citizens. And I've said this before, and I know I repeat this ad nauseum. The coolest thing to me is that when people come up to me and say, I used to watch you when I was a kid, now I watch you with my kids.
Yeah, that's perfect. And I also love the fact that that there are people who sport, there are many people who sport Svengoolie tattoos, which is always one of my favorite things.
Nick, that is amazing to me to this very day.
Right.
I must have seen now at least between 40 and 50 of these tattoos.
Yeah.
And as I've said before, you know, my own family wouldn't do that.
Well, Rich, it's always just an honor and a pleasure to talk to you. I can't wait to see you in person in August at the Flashback. And congratulations on 40 years. We'll do a big celebration at Flashback for that, Rich.
Well, thanks so much. It's going to be great to have you be a part of it. I really appreciate
that. I'm very excited. Rich, always a pleasure, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, and make sure you check out Svengoolie.com.
Svengoolie.com, everybody. Check it out. Okay. Rich, thanks, man.
Thank you, Nick. Okay. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks, man. Rich Coase, man. National treasure, Svengoolie. May 4th, Frankenstein, the original. May 11th, Bride of Frankenstein. May 18th, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. May 25th, Ghost of Frankenstein. All on MeTV, Saturday nights at 7 o'clock. Frankenstein Month, hosted by the great Rich Coase, Svengoolie. All right, we'll take a break. We've got the news coming up next on WGN.